What a week we have had. My goodness. Snow, ice, minus 1100 degrees, felt like, at times. Howling gales, snow drifts. Cars blocked, roads blocked, people going nowhere. How was your week? Were you disturbed from what you had planned? Anybody not able to get to work as normal? Yeah, phew. Any of you at least unable to fulfill the plans you'd made previously? Yeah. Anybody not noticed there was any difference this week? None. Okay. When you get away from the norm, it's quite interesting the things that begin to develop. And when the weather is as extreme as it has been this week, it does have that tendency in a remarkable way to kind of strip away the things that previously we thought were so important, so necessary, and it somehow reminds us of the things that really matter. So all those appointments that people have that they consider to be so crucial, going to the hairdressers each week and having that little tint or perm or whatever people have these days, playing table tennis, golf, whatever it might have been, good luck on finding the golf course if you went this week, even doing the basic things, car wash, shopping, going and visiting friends, going to work. The things you might consider absolute essentials, when a week like this happens, they're called into question. Doctor's appointments, dental appointments, even the hospital. Ooh, they're sacred, aren't they? No, not when the weather is as severe as it is. We have to challenge. Those are the things that go, and we tend to remind ourselves of those things that are truly essential. Food. Shelter, security. Those are the things that people have been hankering after, particularly this week. And you come back to those calls. Getting around has been quite a challenge this week. For me, driving, you know, I just take it for granted. Don't even think about it. I sort of press the button, start the car, and I know usually where I'm going, and I go. Couldn't quite do that this week. I won't tell you the story of what happened on Margaret's drive, which was interesting. But okay, I parked the car on the drive to pick somebody up and just thought it was all right. I did have a quick check round, thought, well, I've got at least one tyre that is on the driveway itself. There's no ice there. I think it'd be all right. Went into the house, came out 2 minutes later, my car was in the middle of the road. And it hadn't rolled into the road, it had slipped into the road. And the car weighs 2 tons, this is a bit concerning. However, no one was walking past, so it was all right. But the roads all around where we are in Ardley were practically impassable at places. Even last night, one of the roads was still down to a single lane with a 3-foot snowdrift on the other side. Snow plows have been going around trying to clear because of the snow blowing off the roads. So even the things you take for granted, you have to step back and think again. And I've been talking to a few friends and colleagues and asking them, how did you get on this week? Were you distracted from various things? One of the two of them wrote back with some interesting answers. One said, you know, it was fantastic. I loved it. He said, I've caught up on sleep. I've caught up on paperwork. Caught up on watching certain things on TV that have been recorded, not got round to watching. I've caught up on reading. I've gone for long walks, had a chat with loved ones. It's been brilliant to stop and get back to doing some of these core things. And what I've noticed is there's been a chance to reconnect. And there were times as we were various members of the church were phoning around to see, are you okay? Is your heating working? Because various ones I know have not had heating working this week. To just check and reconnect. We've been building community and having meaningful conversations as a consequence of getting away from the norm. And that reminded me that perhaps that's precisely what Lent seeks to do spiritually. To take us away from the norm and get back to something that's really core, that really matters. And one thing about this week that has just gone, this is the week, if you've done anything even remotely interesting or seen sights that were beautiful, like a completely pure white snow-covered landscape, those are the things that you will remember, and that is what you'll be talking about 10 years from now. You won't be talking about the filing that you did the previous week, or the people you had a meeting with the previous week, or the journey that you went on that you've completely forgotten already about. It's those key things. Do you know, that's what I think Lent offers to us. Because all year we get absorbed in the stuff of life. We get absorbed with eating like the world eats, absorbing the world's standards. Life becomes pressured. The demands of life soak in. The distractions and the attractions, they encroach, and the pressures build, and something has to give. And all too often, even for Christians who are committed to God, it is our time with Him that is challenged. Our attitude to God slips. Our commitment to God slips. Our time with His people can slip. Just think about it. When are the times when you're not able to be here? When you're not able to gather with the Lord, with His brother, your brothers and sisters? Well, those are the very times, whatever it is for you that stops you coming, those are the things that are life that has this tendency to subtly encroach. Lent gives an opportunity to step back and step back into that crucial relationship with God, to give that relationship the focus it really deserves and put God back up on the agenda. And I want to suggest to you that a Lenten fast has the capacity to do that more powerfully than just about anything else. And I mention that this morning because on Friday, as I said, we come to that period of 21 days, the second half of Lent, ending on Maundy Thursday, when some of us are going to fast as part of a church. And I want to invite you to consider whether you might take a response towards God in that context this year. So let me remind you of a few things about what this whole process of fasting is. And the first thing is, it is more than just a good idea. Do you know, when Jesus began his ministry and he walked with his disciples and he met with the crowds that came and gathered with him, he spent his time devoted to teaching them how to live their lives in relationship with God. Not just how to fulfill religious practices or set about new traditions, but how to live in a life that honored God, in harmony with God. And if you were to read the Sermon on the Mount, and particularly Matthew chapter 6, you would see that he reminds us of three spiritual disciplines which were routinely practiced by people of the day. But he happens to mention them because they were being abused by the people who were trying to look particularly pious in their society. Those three spiritual disciplines were giving, praying and fasting. Giving, praying and fasting. And by choosing those to talk about, albeit that he was talking about how they were being abused, he was pointing to the fact, he was making clear that giving, praying and fasting were a normal part of life for God's people. He didn't say, if you feel like giving or praying or fasting, he said, when you pray. Let me read it to you. This is from Matthew 6, verse 2.
So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets like the hypocrites do. Verse 3. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right is doing. Verse 5. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites. Verse 6. But when you pray. Verse 16. And when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do. Verse 17. But when you fast, put oil on your head, wash your face. When you fast. It seems that Jesus expected his disciples to take these spiritual practices as a norm in their lives. And if you just think about it, for any mature Christian, giving, we recognize, is an important part of what we do. It's a duty. We recognize that God is the giver of all things. And as a response to that, in the economy of God's kingdom, there is an expectation that God's people would give towards those in need, towards kingdom work. Praying. It is inconceivable for a Christian who has and claims a relationship with God not to then talk to him. That would be a nonsense. How could any relationship, whether it be a marriage or anything else, be a relationship where no one speaks? Praying is an expectation. Could it be that fasting is there just as significant an expectation therefore for God's people? Well, I'm going to suggest it is. And I'm going to suggest it is so much more than just a good idea. Because it could be that we are missing out on some of the greatest experiences of God and achieving some of the most significant breakthroughs in your life, in your Christian faith walk, if you don't engage with fasting. Because fasting is about having an opportunity to conquer the bigger issues. Sorry, I'll make that a little brighter. Do you remember the story in Matthew chapter 17 when a man brought his son who was demon-possessed before Jesus? And he came to him and he'd had a horrendous time. This poor young boy had had this spirit that had caused him to throw himself into a fire, be burnt, just dreadful things happening. And his father was at the end of his tether. He tried everything. He'd even gone to the disciples, but the disciples hadn't been able to heal him. And he came to Jesus, and Jesus spoke to him, and he was healed immediately. How come Jesus could do that, but the disciples couldn't when earlier in Matthew 10, he had sent the disciples out with the power to cast out demons and heal all the people? Well, Jesus explains it. And when he's alone, after this healing has taken place with his disciples, he gathers them together and he tells them. And he speaks about them not being able to do so because of their limited faith. It's the passage that speaks about, if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you'll say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. That's the passage we're talking about. But he then moves on to speak about this issue of this boy, spiritually oppressed. And he says, but this kind of spirit never comes out except by prayer. And many versions say prayer and fasting. It takes something else. Jesus himself had spent much time before this incident fasting. This is Jesus. He's the Son of God, but he regarded fasting as an important part of what he did. And it seems that there are some things that I cannot explain whereby fasting releases an opportunity to bring the power of God into play. And it's an expectation for his disciples to do something about it. Jesus expected his disciples to fast, to unlock spiritual opportunities for them. What about you? Whether you are feeling perhaps a little spiritually dry at the moment, maybe you know that there's something in life that you've been battling with and you need a breakthrough. Maybe there is something that seems insurmountable. Maybe there is something about your behavior or your actions that you're struggling to get right and consistent with God. Well, the indication of Scripture is that fasting in such situations might just open the door to allow God to do something else. And the major characters of Scripture all engaged in fasting. And they engaged particularly where they had a genuine, sincere concern for the situation that they were fasting, that they were facing. So, if I mention Esther, you know the story of Esther. Haman was this man who wanted to completely annihilate all the Jews. So what did Queen Esther do? She called all Jews to have a 3-day fast. And at the end of this period, not only were the Jews saved, but Haman's evil plans were exposed and he ended up being hung on the gallows that he'd built for Esther. Hannah, the mother of Samuel, 1 Samuel 17. She was a woman tormented because she couldn't have children. And she prayed to the Lord. She was on her knees and she didn't eat. And God heard her plea and Samuel was born. Judah, Ezra, Nehemiah, the people of Nineveh, David, all of them fasted at crucial points in their lives, and they saw breakthroughs as a result. Like Moses and then Jesus after him, Elijah fasted for 40 days as he was en route to face what he was going to go through on Mount Sinai. And then, of course, the passage that Hazel read to us, Daniel. Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, all facing the prospect of having to bow down to this false god, and they weren't prepared to do it. So they engaged in this partial fast for 21 days to demonstrate that their God was the true God. And my goodness, what a turnaround it was. Do you know, it is the easiest thing in the world for us to operate our Christian lives as we sometimes drive our cars when it's not snowing. We switch it onto autopilot. It is the easiest thing in the world for us to engage in our Christian activities and forget the spiritual battles that we are facing. And we sometimes struggle to overcome what Satan would throw at us. Paul, writing to the church at Ephesus, said this: "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." And we need all the spiritual toolkit that is at our disposal. And God has given us fasting as one of the means to address these battles. But I want to talk about something else, about going deeper. Because if your heart is to have a meaningful relationship with God, to get back to that crucial core relationship, then fasting is a way to really bless you. Is that what you want in your relationship with God? Are you enjoying reading the Maggie Dawn book still? You've been reading that this week? Did you read the one on Monday? Monday was the one where she was talking about Job. And Job going through his intense suffering. He lost his family. He lost his wealth. He lost his health, covered in horrendous sores. And then he had to endure his three comforters and his wife. That doesn't sound right, does it? But if you read the passage, you'll understand why. His wife urged him to just give up his faithfulness towards God and trusting God. Just curse God and die was that famous phrase she came out with. Their conclusion was that he was going through what he was going through. He was suffering as he was because quite clearly he must have sinned in some horrific way. That is dreadful theology. It is bad theology because it makes the suggestion that the amount of blessing you get is appropriate to the amount of good things you might go through and do for God. It's like, as she puts it, as Maggie Dawn puts it, it's sort of slot machine theology. You pay your money in and all the blessings come out to you. Job didn't believe that. He thought that was just so simplistic. He believed that God had a purpose in his life, even though he was suffering. And his suffering was not because of the horrendous sin that others thought it might be. But he didn't know what it was. So what did he do about it? He stayed faithful to his God and he went deeper. He wrestled with God. He battled. He talked to God. He was in agony. He pleaded with God to take it away. He prayed and he wrestled with his God over this issue. And you know, at the end of this whole episode, the end of all those chapters in Job, we realized that he didn't get an answer from God at all. He didn't get a specific reason. But what happened was as he pursued his relationship with God, that relationship grew as his heart's desire was to go deeper and get to God much more. And that's what happened. His relationship grew. That caused me to think, do you know why the nation of Israel is called the nation of Israel? It comes down to the character of Jacob. Do you remember the family tree? Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob, Esau and Jacob. And Jacob was the one who wrestled with an angel. And he would not let go. He wrestled with the angel. And to the end, the angel put his thumb in his hip socket and put his socket out. And as a consequence, he was hobbling thereafter. And it was that incident that was referred to by God when he changed Jacob's name to Israel. Because Israel means God contended. He wrestled with God. It's what Israel would do as a nation. Do you know what? I think it's what God's people should do. It is what we should be about, engaging in God deeply. God doesn't want us to just follow a number list like doing a dot-to-dot puzzle. Oh, go to the next one. Now do the next one. Now, he wants us to talk to him, to engage with him. And when life, frankly, sucks and it's awful and we're battling to overcome, he wants us to talk to him, to engage, to wrestle with him, because it's through that that our relationship grows. We've just sung, "Speak, O Lord, as we come to you, to receive the food of your holy word. Take your truth, plant it deep within. Teach us, Lord, full obedience. Cause our faith to rise. Speak, O Lord, and renew our minds. Help us grasp the heights of your plan for us." You sung the words, did you mean it? Because that's a calling for God to get to the very core of our being and shake it up. That's what happens when we go a step further with fasting. Let me give you just a few practical things about fasting as a bit of a reminder to you. First of all, fasting is not just going without food. That's dieting. Fasting is not just about having a physical benefit at the end. Yes, lots of us maybe need to lose a pound or two, but it's not about that. That may be a side benefit, but it is actually about abstaining from food for spiritual purposes. The principle of fasting is to bring our thoughts into God's thoughts, to help us bring our life, our bodies under his control. We claim that he has lordship over our lives. Fasting helps us to center on God, removing some of the stuff that in life just piles in and gets in the way, to say, Lord, you are more important than food. If it's a fast of electronic devices, Lord, you are more important than those things, whatever it is for you. The motivation is all about the individual surrendering themselves to God and humbling ourselves before God. That's the purpose. Have you noticed we are so confident, so cocky about our lives? We have everything sewn up. We have fridges full of food. We have insurance policies for everything in life. We know what our pension plans are going to be. We know where we're working next week. Everything's sorted out. What do we need God for? Do you know, fasting takes us back to a place of walking with humility before God. And in the same way that I needed to concentrate on my driving because there was a 3-foot snowdrift on either side of the car on Thursday and Friday, so fasting causes us to think about the food, the stuff we put into our bodies. Seeking to know God, his purposes, his will. It is also about recognizing that God is always the focus of our fasting. One of the easiest things in the world with fasting is to get it, or to think of it, as something that gets God to do what we want him to do. And actually, we can pray in the same way. But fasting should be about saying, Lord, what do you want to do? Here I am in my torment, just as Job was in his torment. Lord, what do you want to say? What do I need to learn? How can I change? And giving him those things that we wrestle with. It is motivated by our relationship with God. Please do not consider fasting this week because I am asking you to. Consider fasting this week because the God of this world, your God, invites you to. If your life is at a kind of stalemate place and you feel your relationship with him is struggling, it is an opportunity to say, Lord, I'm willing to take that next step, take another commitment. And I encourage you to do that. But don't treat it as just a box that's ticked. Oh, if I do that, then this will automatically happen. He wants your heart to come be before him. It's about engaging our attitude, inviting him to work on the things that we struggle with. One more thing. We're in it together. There's something really powerful, I believe, about a church as a whole engaging in the practice of fasting. Something wonderful about it. One of the situations in Scripture when we find fasting coming up most often is where a new work of commissioning was about to begin, where a new spiritual work was about to be embarked on, or where God's people were seeking guidance. So, for example, Moses, before he received the Ten Commandments, spent 40 days fasting. The Christians in Antioch fasted. The whole church came together before Barnabas and Paul were sent out on the first missionary journey. Barnabas and Paul fasted before they chose elders in the different churches locally. Before each of those things took place, these were huge spiritual undertakings. They were activities for God. And in each case, being aligned with God's will was essential. So they actively, passionately, and with total commitment sought the Lord through fasting. One We have been called as a church to wait on the Lord. And I believe he's asked us to come and spend time listening to him. There are a number of people who feel that perhaps this year is a year when God is going to bring about certain change. Are you willing to be part of approaching him spiritually, on your knees, and engage in that process? As a church, when we come together to pray and as we come together to fast, it has that increased emphasis and power before God. I learned some lessons this week from just watching the nature around us and the way that things were unfolding. I shared some observations at the start of our service. I want to share some at the end of the service again, because I believe that God is inviting you all to come and join in a feast in one way or another. And I've been watching feasting all week. Let me give you some example. Do you know your birds? Do you know what that is? This peanut feeder has been covered this week with a vast array of birds. And certainly, the blue tit is one of the most common. There's another one. What's that bird? Coal tit. The little stripe on the back of his head tells him apart. So the coal tit comes. What's this one? Great tit. Bit of a bully. Sees the others off very often. What's that? Long tail tits. Who's he? Great spotted woodpecker. If I was him, I'd be a bit nervous about pecking like that with the case there's an avalanche. But yes, this is just put the camera down and I set it to record over a couple of days on automatic. And then, what's that, do you know? Starling. All these different birds that feed in different ways, but all coming to the feast. Cost me a fortune in peanuts, but I didn't therefore particularly want these two. But you know these? Jackdaws. Two of these huge boys. This bird feeder was not intended for jackdaws, but they help themselves. But the picture that was coming through this was all this opportunity and all these individuals coming together to feed. God is inviting us, I believe, to feast at his table if we're prepared to come. But that's not the end of the story, because I don't want to bully anyone. I don't want to make anyone feel awkward or guilty, and so therefore to fast for that reason. So as I looked, it began to dawn on me, there are some birds that just don't come up there at all. They feed in a very different way. So goldfinch and sparrows, yeah, they don't like sitting on a peanut feeder. They will if they're absolutely desperate. They want to feed in another way. Goldfinch, again, they're real acrobats. So they'll just hang upside down. And there are some that won't come anywhere near a feeder. So the blackbird in the background, and then the one, do you know the one in the foreground? That was a dunnock. Collared doves. They're not going to go onto the feeders. They have another way of feasting. Chaffinch, again, he's one picking up the bits around the floor, because that's what they do. Do you know this one? Redwing, very good. Don't think I've ever seen this in the garden, but this week when the snow was as intense as it was, four of them, and he's there, he's been staring up. He's looking for berries. They're desperate for food. And I began to think about this, and I began to think, you know, is this who we are? Are we desperate for food? Are we desperate for more of God, of what he wants to offer to us? Because the irony is, fasting is a way of engaging more with what God wants to feed us with. But you don't have to do it in just a strict way. Most of us are going to go for this Daniel fast this week, beginning on Friday. I want to invite you to consider it, because actually you don't have to starve. You can eat plenty of food, but it's vegetables instead of meat, water instead of wine. Sorry, like me, you're going to have to give up tea if you want to go down that route for 3 weeks. It's not easy, but it's in the denial, we deny ourselves, that we demonstrate that commitment to God. But maybe for health reasons, you can't do that. Well, different birds point the way, I think. There are other things that you can do. But would you join us in a fast in one way or another? But I said, the point of bringing into this is that we're all in this together. The birds that really taught me something this week, that I hope will speak to you, is the birds that are really in it together. The long-tailed tits. They're mad. They're crazy. They come with twos and threes, and then another one will just join in. And they share, and they have absolutely no problem joining together and filling that feeder. You think, how do they manage to cope like that with these tails that are like swords that stick out? You think they'd knock each other off, but they don't. They come and they feast. And as I was watching them, this is what caused me to turn the recorder on and to watch them. I just thought, wouldn't that be wonderful if that was us? Do you notice that when most of them are feeding, there's always someone that's looking around, looking for what else, making sure there's no danger. That's what we do when we come to this together. We feast together. We build community. We do something really special. And then I was outside, I was about to disappear off, and it just got crazy. I don't know how many are there now, 7, 8, whatever. They just piled in. It'd be wonderful if we could learn the lesson, until, of course, someone comes and bullies them off and causes them to clear off. I want to invite you this Lent to come and to share and to enjoy what God will bring to us in the process. If you've never gone through it before and you are concerned and you're anxious, talk to me. Talk to those who did this last year, and we'll share some things. On here, on the table and at the table at the back, there are some sheets you can take away. And there are lists of the sort of foods that you can have and shouldn't be having for the Daniel fast. But there are other things that you can do. But whilst you are fasting, bring yourself to God. Those are the times to pray. Put some worship on in the background and just speak to the Lord and come back to a simple place, the sort of place where you find yourself when the snow comes down and you're prevented from going out. I believe that's God's invitation to you over these next few weeks. May He really bless you in the process. Let's sing our final hymn together.